set up here. Guys, we're looking at structure. Steve, man, super helpful session on staying on the line. It really kind of puts the week into perspective, seeing that there are real stakes to what we're doing when it comes to handling the Bible well, not only for our own, like our faithfulness doesn't just affect our own welfare, but those under our care. And as they pointed out on the pathway, that lines up with our worksheet. So if you're looking at the first question on your worksheet, it is structure. Let me begin with our picture here. Oh, that's the invisible ink. Okay. What's the picture? You thought the three-legged stool was bad. This one's pretty rough, huh? What do you think this is? Hieroglyphics. Close, but wrong. Do you know hieroglyphics, Ben? Can you interpret this for us? Anybody else? You could make a face?
Yeah.
Okay, where's the nose?
Do
you have a nose?
Circle.
That's the face, yeah, I figured
yeah.
that.
No, I would use a circle for the nose. Like, oh. I don't necessarily draw the outline of the face.
Interesting. So you'd go like this?
Yes, exactly.
Wow.
I'm not sure what to do with the cross yet, but maybe it's
yeah. You know, one guy told me that this is, yeah, go ahead, brother. Yeah, you cheated, man. Somebody's talking to you. Or you're really smart. It could be. Somebody told me this was a gospel presentation once. Because he saw, and I was like, man, you're working too hard at this. Because they're like, yeah, you have like the arrow down is like incarnation, the first thing here. I mean, he really worked, gentlemen. He was off the line on the drawing. But here's the cross. Here's, you know what this is? What's the circle? That's the empty tomb. Okay, you guys know this game. Yes, sir. Our brother back there has suggested that this is a dissembled stick figure. Well, let's see if he's right. Anybody see it now? Okay, so why didn't you all see it the first time? Why did nobody else get it? Sorry, I put the arms in the wrong spot. Maybe you didn't see it because it's a bad drawing. What made it hard to see? Yeah. They were kind of separate, but I lined them up all neatly and nicely next to one another, didn't I? It was kind of like a commentary in some ways. It's like, okay, here's verse 1, here's verse 2, here's verse 3. Let me just see why, and we're doing a talk on structure. What from this drawing, what could just be some takeaways about, man, if I'm going to do structure, because now you can see what it is. Before you would have just said, man, it's some crazy squiggles, we're doing some weird interpretive things about gospel connections. Just from this little exercise, what might be some takeaways for how we think about doing structure in a literary text? Some thoughts on that? Good. What do you mean by placement matters? Yeah. Understanding not just what the parts are, but how they fit together. Because if I did like his suggestion, you might have had a face and not a skeleton, right? Yeah, great. Other ideas. Apparently you had the best idea. Yeah, go ahead, brother. Workshop. It's a relationship clinic where you have to just define the relationship between everything that we're doing. So we're going to think about the relationship between the text to the gospel. But here it's this relationship of parts of the text to parts of the text. And I think for me, one of my biggest struggles that I'm always fighting for, it's really hard for me still really hard for me. I'm getting better. I'm recovering. Was that I was really good at finding parts of a text. But understanding how they fit together and related to one another, man, that was hard. So I could just be like, oh, I got this, and now I got this, and now I got this. But no understanding of relationship. So that's what we're going to think about today. Maybe just one other danger. When you saw this, just the part without the relationship, what did you think it was? Yeah, somebody even said it. They thought it was a cross, right? But what is it? It's like the torso. It's the spine and the whatever, shoulder bones, not an anatomy guy, right? So actually, when you don't see it in relationship to what it is, you misunderstand the thing itself. You need to see it in light of the whole to get the picture as it is. So you don't know what you're talking about until you see the whole thing. You don't know what you're talking about until you see how the whole thing fits together. That's what we mean when we talk about emphasis. Let me give you the principle. The principle is simply this. We must discover the structure of a text to discern its emphasis. Discover the structure of a text to discern its emphasis. Two words to pay attention to there. Discover, discern. If you want to know what you're talking about, structure helps you get there. We're not talking about just a weird face. We're not talking about a cross. We're talking about a skeleton. Until you know what you're talking about, you're going to struggle to move anywhere in your preaching. But it's something we discover. When we talk about the pathway for preparation, that first leg is kind of like an archaeologist's job. You're just digging in the text. You're uncovering. You're trying to find, man, what is already there? We're not trying to be creative. We're not trying to add stuff. It doesn't have to be pretty. We're just trying to see what's in the text. We're trying to figure out how it all fits together. Then we're trying to figure out, okay, discern the emphasis. What is this thing about? So when I'm thinking about structure, I think about three steps. This is what we'll practice in a few texts. My three steps are this. One, find the parts. Got to know what's there. When we're in stories, that often means we're looking at scenes. When you're in Romans, you're looking for paragraphs. You're in Psalms, you're looking for stanzas in a poem, right? But I'm trying to find the parts. What are the scenes? What are the moves in this text? Once I know that, man, I'm trying to figure out the relationship between those parts. One example, just here we go, just to show the difference. A husband died at 80. A week later, his wife died. Two separate things. Watch how understanding the relationship shifts it. Husband died. A week later, his wife died of grief. You see how just understanding the kind of causality piece is like, oh, man, now I know so much more about that situation, even by adding just two words. Demonstrating causality and relationship between two statements, huge. Third, then, is we have to state the emphasis. Having found the parts, we consider how they fit together. What is the big thing, the main thing that this text is talking about? It's not a main point yet. We're not that far. It's just, well, we'll practice it. All right, let's think about how we do it. When you guys were coming this week, and you got to question one on your worksheet, what were things you were looking for in order to help find structure in your passage? What kind of things do you look for in a text, particularly in a narrative text, are going to help you find parts to it? Go ahead. Yeah, somebody said geographical. What do you mean by that? Okay, so you're talking about changes in geography? Yeah, great. So geographical shifts. Beautiful. What's another one? Sorry.
Story arc.
Yeah, story arc or plot arc. Great. Following a story or a plot. Great. Others? Repetition of words or phrases. Can you tell me how that would help you in finding a structure? How's that helping you find parts? You say a word on that? Okay, so leading towards, sometimes it can help you identify chiasm in a structure, right? Yeah, and so you're like, one, be careful with chiasms. We want to be responsible with chiasms, right? Responsible, not crazy. And there are good responsible chiasms to be done, but responsible is key. Repetition can help you see those, and sometimes they can help you explain, like the good repetitions, finding chiasm, help you explain things in a text that you can't figure out otherwise. Another way repetition might help is you have a word that's, man, this paragraph has this word repeated like 8 times. And then you get to the next paragraph, and it's a different word repeated like 8 times. Ah, okay, talking about two. Great, repetition, love it. Others, right here. Time markers, yeah. You have a word on that? What, you specific in mind, or? Yeah, the next day, in the morning, that night, 6 months later, whatever, right? Beautiful. Any others? Go ahead. Okay, so you're talking about like lists? Yeah, so I wonder if that might be something we could put into like, we've kind of mentioned a few things here like geography, time, lists. These might be things that we could all put under like literary features. Because you get to a genealogy as a list of sorts, right? And you're like, oh yeah, this is very different from a narrative plot line at this point. Am I scratching where you're itching? Okay, which is also, yeah, lines up with repeated words, right? Yeah, great, okay. What else, anything else? Narratives, right here, brother. Right, so question and answer could be another, yeah, literary feature. I'll just say, dialogue, super important, right, in narrative. The author doesn't have to recount to you word by word what somebody says. So when they do, it's worth paying attention to. So like a question and answer is a great observation. Yeah, back here.
Characters.
Characters, what do you mean? How are those helping you?
What do they change or stay the same in the narrative?
Yeah. So you mean like a character development?
Yeah.
Like he's really angry at the beginning and he's not angry at the end. Yeah, or you look at one character in one part, and then you shift, that character fades off the scene, and you're looking at another character. Yeah, that oftentimes will coincide with a geographical shift or a time shift as well. Yeah, great, characters. Yeah, great. So what you call genre, I think I'm just going to nuance a little to call text type. And so by that, because it sounds like what you're talking about is the difference between like a discourse, which is sustained kind of monologue, argument, speech, versus story, versus poetry, as opposed to like genre. Let me just make the distinction, because I'm sure it's not the old, like, you're in 1 Samuel, which is a genre of Old Testament history, but when you get into chapter 2, you have a poem, right? And it almost is like a psalm, but we're not in psalms as a genre, we're in a history. So that's just the distinction. The form, it's just the very visual shape of a text, as opposed to genre, which carries other kind of historical literary connotations. Like there's history in 1 Samuel, but it's not a gospel, which also has, or there's narrative in 1 Samuel, there's narrative in Mark. Those are different genres, right? So yeah, that's a great point. I'm just gonna write that then up as text type. Yeah, so if you're walking along and you're like, man, all right, I'm reading 1 Samuel 1 for all the guys who did that text, and you get to chapter 2 and you're like, oh, there's a poem here. That's a shift. That's different. That's probably going to be a marker of a structural thing. It's great. Let's practice some of these, guys. Turn to 1 Samuel 5. We're going to work on, for the first one, 1 Samuel chapter 5. Here's what I want you to do. I want you to read it with your neighbor. Have one person read out loud. And the other person, I want you to look for shifts using characters. So I want you to come back to me and say, all right, man, I would make this section based around this character or characters, this section, that section. Use characters as your tool, and as always, Pay attention for repetition.
All right, go ahead. I'm going to give you about 4 minutes on that. Go for it. 1 Samuel 5, find the parts.
All right, let's see what you found. If you were using characters, you go home, you're going to preach 1 Samuel 5. You're like, all right, what are the strategies? One of the things we're told to look for is characters. If you were to use that tool to try to unlock this text, what parts would you find? Who are the characters? Where'd they break out? What'd you see?
Dagon.
Dagon is a character, okay? How did that help you find parts or structure?
Repetition.
Okay, where does he show up?
Okay,
show us. Anybody else see? Anybody else see Dagon as a key character? I hope so. Good. All right. Yeah, probably every verse for the. Okay, so Dagon, key character. Other key characters.
God.
Okay, where is God?
So
it's the ark of the Lord. Okay, great. The hand of the Lord. Okay. Okay. Yeah. So we're learning about who these characters are, right? Other characters?
Philistines.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I'm just going to group them under the Philistines. Did I spell Philistines right? Is it one L or two?
Oh, yeah.
It's close enough. You know what I'm talking about, right? Right, yeah. So it is, in one sense, kind of a battle between these two, right? Okay. And some folks caught in the middle, it seems. Okay? Anybody, how did that help you? Anybody come up with breaks along the lines of these three characters? You're like, okay, these are what I think are the big parts of this text. Where'd you go on that? Okay, so you went Dagon, kind of 1 to 5, and then Philistines through the end. So he's falling apart here, and then what's happening to the Philistines there? And the Lord's kind of working in both of those sections, right? So the Lord's a key character, but he doesn't really help us distinguish the parts at all, because he shows up throughout, right? Okay, it's a great observation. How do you know that? Like, do you know that that's how it's going to be before you come into the text? No. So sometimes you have to pull on all the threads because you don't know which ones are going to work. So you're like, yep, I see the Lord here. All right, does it help me? No. It's a constant. Okay? But yeah, and just let me show you one thing here on this. If you look at verse 7. Somebody read verse 7. How might this help us validate using characters as a strategy for finding structure? Somebody read it out. This verse 7. The Lord's hand is hard against who? Us and Dagon. That summarizes the passage right there in some ways, right? You're like, oh, we've got two groups. So does that mean characters is the right way to do structure in this text? Yeah, leading question. You're like, Walker, that's a bad question. Come up with something better, right? All right, let's try a different strategy then. Because it's not always like just one silver bullet. Yeah, go ahead, brother. You got some? Okay, good. We're going to go ahead do geographical shifts. If that's where, is that where you're going? Geographical shifts. Show us. All right, let me pause. Let me just intro our section because you went exactly where I wanted to. One. Yeah, I paid him before. Like, you didn't see it at the break. One, there's not always just one right tool. Two, you will never know what the right tool is until you try a bunch. Three, we're about to see, when you add multiple tools, they help reinforce one another. They help you understand the text better. So you're not just trying to find like the one silver bullet. You're trying to say, okay, how is this text working? Let me use everything at my disposal. Good. Show us how geography helps us, brother. So that's characters.
Yeah.
So Ashdod, Ekron, Gath is in there, right? So where do the verse breaks? So you said like Ashdod is where? It's 1 till... Where's Gath?
Somebody else said Gath, and I do see. Is that in the territories? That's nine. Okay. So I'm just going to write territories here. So you said like one, two. What? Asher is 1 to 7. You said Gath is 9. Territories is 8. Something like that?
Territories 6 and 7.
6 and 7.
Gath is 8 and 9.
Thank you. Okay. Now, let me just zoom back here and take a look at this whole thing. If you were to talk about this text, trying to summarize, hey, what's the main thing that this is talking about, what God is doing in 1 Samuel 5, according to the character strategy, what would you say? Okay? Say more. God's judgment. Okay. His hand is heavy against God's competing gods and their people. So God wins over everybody. Okay. Now, what if you did geography, as our brother suggested? God wins, not over everybody,
everywhere.
Which one's right? Yes. But do you see, like, how it's not, what are you talking about? You ever go to the eye doctor? You guys haven't been there yet, but the rest of us, what do? You get these kind of lenses and they keep adding more and you get more or less clear. That's what the strategies are for structure. You keep adding it. It's, oh yeah, that's a little better, that's a little better. That's the hope, is like you do geography, you do characters, and you're like, okay, man. So if you're just talking about, we've seen he wins against everyone, divine and human. He wins everywhere, all around Philistia. I'm just asking you, okay, what's the emphasis of this text? What's it about? Okay, that's a main point and an application. Great. I want to be simpler than that. So I think we can get there by saying, why not? Because God wins. Yeah. Or you can say it a handful of other ways. Who wants to take another crack? He's stating it positively in the language I use. God wins. Brother over here said, like, God's judgment, right? Anybody else want to take a swing at something? Like, what's this text about? Yeah. Okay, so you're moving again towards main point. When we're talking about emphasis, I want to be really narrow. 3-4 words, probably not even a full sentence. It's just to answer your question, what's this text about? Again, full sentence.
Supremacy of God.
In what way is that particularly expressed here? Okay, so you're stating negatively, you're stating power, positively. Power of God versus powerlessness, right? Again, when we saw, what were some of the other repetitions we saw? Like the hand of God was heavy. So in one sense, it's probably more the positive, active heaviness of God against enemies everywhere. It's like God's judgment, something to that effect. Or God wins, God's victory is. Now, do you have more work to do on this? Do you have a sermon, a main point yet? We have to look at context. We're going to do work, some context work on this very text later today. So we're going to kind of just put a pin in it. But you've actually begun to see, like, oh, I have a sense for how this text is at least moving. Let's try it in a different one. Turn out of Samuel, go to Genesis 16. I actually heard a few guys are preaching Genesis, which is exciting. I want us to use these same strategies, but in Genesis 16. You said you just preached this? So, let me have somebody read it out loud for us. And then, we don't just do the same thing. Turn with your neighbor, one guy reads, the other guy looking. In Genesis 16, I want you to work on changes in location. We're going to start with the geography one. And as you're looking at that, I want you to consider how much time is passing at each location. as much as you're able to. They're like, oh, given that, what seems to be important? All right? Genesis 16, find the parts by location. And begin thinking about, okay, how much time is happening here? All right, go for it. All right, let's bring it in. Even before we start looking at what you did with geography, let me just ask, what are some of the weird things in this text that might get you distracted? What do you say, like exegetical ADHD or something like that, right? What are the things that are going to take you off course maybe in looking at this text? Polygamy, yeah, right? Like, okay, we got this weird thing, yep. And like, what the heck is going on with Sarai saying this? Yeah. Yeah, so we feel like, man, we got to look up all these places. Sure, okay. Yeah. Yeah, okay. Especially whoever's doing your scripture reading that week's got to be prepared. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Is this like a pre-incarnate Christ thing? Yeah, huge conversations there, right? Okay. So there's just like one thing that I think structure is helpful with, gives us direction. We have all this great energy and velocity towards what we're doing in exegesis and saying, we need direction. Structure helps us get there. How did geography help you? Key locations in the text. Sorry? Okay, where do you see it? Where's Canaan? Okay. Oh, there's wilderness, right? Yeah, is that the same as wilderness? It's more specific, okay? So let's do this. Put that in parentheses. Can you be more specific on Canaan? Yeah, in the home. I had one dude who was like in the bedroom. Okay. So, yeah, that's real specific. If you were to use these markers for your these geographical markers for your arrangement for kind of understanding the parts, where would you assign verse breaks?
1 to 6.
Okay, so home, yeah. 1 to 6. And I know there's a little bit outside the home, maybe, whatever, but okay.
7 to 14.
Okay. How much time passes in this chapter? How do you know? But who said that? Yeah, because of the baby, right? You conceive in verse 4, born in verse 15. So you have about 9 months passing temporally. Think about each of these kind of scenarios. So if the whole chapter runs 9 months, how much time passes in each one of these? Any idea? Yeah, now do we really know? It doesn't really say, right? Yeah, it doesn't really say. We don't really know. Any other thoughts on time? Not a trick question.
I mean, if my wife knew that I had sex with somebody, I'd be out the next day.
So that first one's going to be a real short period. I'm hoping your wife is not farming you out like this, though. How much time is passing here? Huh? Yeah, what's the event that's happening that's recorded there? Yeah, and she's in distress, whatever. But it's a single conversation. How long do you think that conversation, again, I know we're like in the speculative realm here, so I'm not like trying to make a whole lot out of this, but conversation is out of a 9 month period, it's a relatively short window, right? And how much of the text gets attention? How much like attention is given to it by text? How much weight, space-wise? Half the chapter is focused, half the chapter is dialed in on what's happening right here. Now just think, let's just lay some other tools, because you're like, all right, Walker, you're drawing stuff on time, and the text says nothing about time. How might characters help us? Like, is there a special character that shows up that might be like, oh, what happens here might be important? Angel of the Lord, pretty important character. So look at what's happening now. We use a location, and we say, okay, yeah, we got home, wilderness with a spring, and home. This seems to be like, man, a short conversation. It's a lot of space in the text. We find out that using characters, there's a really important character that shows up, the angel of the Lord. Okay? So if you're just thinking, like, this is pretty important, how does it relate? How do I ask this question? Starts at home. Why does she leave? Let's think about relationship. She leaves why? Being mistreated. Yep. So there we have this causality, right? It's not just she's home, she leaves, she's home. She's home and she leaves because she's mistreated. Why does she go back? Tells her to. And what? How could the angel of the Lord motivate her in such a way to do that? Gives a promise. Okay. Did you notice anything about the particular promise? Yeah, so there's a blessing and a promise. I don't mind you, anything else like in Genesis? I know we're not in a Genesis workshop, some other guys who are preaching. Sounds like what happened to Abraham and Sarah, right? But not as good. So she gets a promise, and how does she respond to it? She's like, okay, I'll go back, even to a place where I'm being mistreated. Because I have a promise on belief. So now what you have is, let's just dial this out a little. You have an Egyptian woman receiving a promise, believing it, and obeying it. That's what's sitting in the middle of your text. How does that relate to what's happening on either side of it? How's that relating to what's on the other side of it? Right. They had a better promise. God's people didn't believe it, or at least didn't act like they believed it very well in this thing. So now you have a contrast of faith. Go ahead, brother. You got a question? Yeah, so who's the audience to this book? Who's reading Genesis? Just let's do, we're going to step into historical context for a second. They're standing at the plains of Moab, ready to walk into the land. What happened to their parents who didn't believe the promise? They died. Hence, what ought we to do? What ought the people of God be like? The Egyptian woman who believed a promise. So, let's dial back. It's a great point to be like, the historical context adds a lot of color here. You have a contrast between God's people who don't believe the promise, an Egyptian woman who believes a less good promise, but is far more faithful to it. And that's now put before the people of God who actually have a big decision to make as they're about to walk into a step of faith in many ways to go into the land. So all of a sudden, all these things that we're like, man, we have to think about, like how much time would we have spent in our sermons talking about the custom of Abram, of Sarai, like giving Abram to another woman, and like, yes, you can do that, and that's how you pair. You maybe need to like say a word on that, but you probably don't need to spend a whole lot, because when you think about the emphasis, we've talked about the parts, we've talked about the relationships, one of contrast. The emphasis, what's this text about? What are you going to say it's about? 30 seconds, tell the guy next to you. What's the text about? What's the emphasis here? You got to give me three words. This text is about what? Go ahead. All right, tell me what your partner said. That way there's no risk for you. If it's a bad answer, you just embarrass the guy next to you. What did your partner say that this text is about, broadly? Go ahead. God sees unfairness, okay? Others? Believing a promise. Or not, by way of contrast, right? Another one. Yeah, so kind of what you're saying is, believing a promise, what we're talking about. What's he saying about that promise? Yeah, great. So we're saying that, like, man, quick and dirty. Like, guys, there's 100 other things you've got to do here, right? We're doing this in, like, 11 minutes, okay? You should spend longer than this when you're preparing for your sermons, okay? All we're trying to do is just really modestly say that when you read a story, there are some simple things that you can put into play that aren't going to get you everything. This doesn't get you everything. I'm not trying to say it does. There's a lot more nuance and all that stuff that you probably need to get to. What I'm trying to say is it's at least giving you direction in terms to know, like, oh, now I know that, like, the Abram and Sarai thing is in contrast to the Egyptian. They're not just two weird stories sitting next to one another. But it's by way of showing that, like, she's believing God in a way, way more than they are. And that's a challenge to the people reading this book. So those are some of the literary features and how they help us. And I really just want to say that don't try to pick just one. We didn't get the plot arc. Plot arc is like a drug. I didn't put it first on purpose, because once you see plot arc, that's all you see. But what I want to say is you'll get a chance to do those in your small groups. The goal here is just to see, using multiple strategies, adds more clarity in terms of understanding what are the parts, what are the relationships, and how do I know what the heck I'm talking about in this passage? So, because when you do that, let me just bring our principle back again here. You've got to discover the structure of the text. You're going to discern its emphasis. Finding the parts and how they relate. That's telling you what the main thing this is about, and it's about discovery work in our